women, children, and dogs the only things on earth loved unconditionally? Well, the comedian Chris Rock thinks so. I want to respond to that and do a lot more on the Corey Truax Show. Audio clips galore. Well, it's three. I have three audio clips I want to share with you. One from Chris Rock, one from kind of a nutty type Christian, a guy I think we should probably avoid, and so I want to respond to something he said. And then Tim Keller had a sermon from 1993 that I can't believe is from 93. It's so appropriate for today regarding the tyranny of feelings and emotions and how that just rules our culture. I want to play that clip for you as well, and then I have one final story from the Wall Street Journal about the worldwide dwindling birth rate and all the consequences thereof. I don't know if you can tell. I'm in a really good mood. I really like this show this week. I haven't started it yet. I couldn't mess it all up. But the opportunity for this to be really engaging, entertaining, and educating, all three, where we're going to engage with culture, have some fun along the way, and really learn some stuff. I'll learn some things along the way. There's a lot of opportunity here. Thank you for being here on the Corey Truax Show. Wherever you find podcasts, you can find the show. Hope that you will review and rate the show. Wherever you find it, it helps others come along the way. You can find me in lots of places, but one place you can find me is Sunday mornings at 10:30 at Beechwood Church. I'll be starting back up in June going through the Epistle to the Hebrews, so I'll have that on the podcast feed certainly, but would love to have you out to Beechwood Church any given Sunday morning. We meet at 10:30 there in Greenville. Let's get started with Chris Rock. I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy. Chris Rock is a top 10 for me. Very talented guy, very funny. And one of the things about Chris Rock comedy is he will say something uproariously funny and then bring you down with his tone and sequence and speed and cadence to say something very meaningful. And so you go for emotional appeal, and then it's really excitement with the comedy. And he had a clip go semi-viral that I want to share with you. I'll give you a reaction after you've heard it and where it's coming from. So this is Chris Rock. It's about a minute long. Listen closely, and then I want to respond to it. I'd love for you to assess it as you hear it and ask yourself, is what he's saying true? Here you go. This is Chris Rock.
There's a coldness that you have to accept when you're a man. Only women, children, and dogs are loved unconditionally. Women, children, and dogs are loved unconditionally. A man is only loved under the condition that he provides some.
And the look on his face is that he's very satisfied. He's made quite the discovery. An inequity in a world obsessed with everything being equal, with men and women being the same, in a world obsessed with everybody getting the same thing, a bemoanment that women get to just be loved for being them. And that's their expectation. Their expectation is to be able to just exist in the world, be themselves, and then find someone who just loves their truest self. Children get that. They just get to be themselves, and their expectation is that someone will love them and accept them the way they are. He says dogs there as well. But a man, he's not getting love unless he's providing, unless he's protecting, unless he is giving some kind of service, and it's not fair. Men are the ones singled out here. This is not a unique sentiment. You might have heard the term red pill. Guys, I have put that on the show. The red pill guys, what do you call these? The folks that are like Andrew Tate, this terrible masculinity. They might use the word patriarchal, but that term should actually be a biblical term and works well when done correctly and not done insanely, like some folks in Christianity do. But just call those red pill guys, the manosphere out there on the internet that have bemoaned and come together to. I was going to say whine, but I don't want to belittle the thought, to bemoan the fact that it's not fair. Men have fought all the wars. Men have built all the infrastructure. Men have built the world in large part. This is their script. And then women come along and expect us to sweep them off their feet and work hard for them And what do they provide us? And so a large chunk of a generation of men, call it the 40 and unders, decide, I quit that setup. So I'm going to take the, you have, men have been asked for generations to give, build, protect, provide. Well, I'm done. I'm taking. So I will be a player, and I will have many, many women. This is Andrew Tate's take. I will have all the women I want. I have built something. I have physical appeal. He's gigantic and muscular. I have financial appeal. I have endless dollars. No woman is going to tie me down. I'm going to take from women what I want. And then in the transaction, I'll provide some things for them. But no, I'm not going to provide for anybody. Everyone else gets to take. We get to take now. That is the philosophy for men. Now, Chris Rock's is a more emotional appeal. There's a sadness to it. Even the person who put the piano music behind that take gets more of Chris Rock's take. Isn't it just sad? This is, again, not me speaking. I'm making their point. Isn't it so sad for men? If they're not providing, they don't get to know what it feels like to be loved. They always know, if I'm not providing enough to pay for the mortgage, she wouldn't really love me. If I did not provide the fun times and put in the effort, my kids wouldn't really love me. They'd spend their time somewhere else. Isn't it sad that a man's love is dependent on what he provides? All right. That's what they say is the problem. Now I want to critique it. One, I'll critique it on a biblical perspective here in a second. I would also just argue, in a biblically designed world, it's just not true from the start. A man was once a boy, and therefore he was once a child. And his parents, even in Chris Rock's estimation, loved him unconditionally. And this is now my parents. I know probably more than half the people listening to me don't have the situation. I would argue, here I am at 38. My parents loved me unconditionally. Whatever that means, if I wasn't as productive, if I did not do the things that I was required to do, they would still love me. But they might be disappointed that I didn't meet, if I weren't keeping my obligations, they would be disappointed in the person I became. But there are situations in which, yeah, as a grown man, you are still loved, you know, by your parents, maybe by siblings, something like that. But now, here's the argument I want to make back to Chris Rock and the manosphere and the red pillars, the guys who say it's unfair, men are not loved unconditionally. Here's how I want to argue it. Gentlemen, you've missed one level of approval. You have assumed a secular and godless world. You've assumed that in this world, those are the categories. There's just men, there's women, there's children, there's animals. Men have led the world, led the families. They've been in charge. And as they've taken on that mantle of leadership and provision, there is no love unconditionally for them. That's not what the design pattern we would see in Genesis would give us. I will illustrate it this way. You know when a dog, we'll use Chris Rock's categories. You know when a dog is most satisfied and happy and secure? When he knows his owner delights in him. When the owner is pleased in him, that dog can sleep well and just chills and loves his life. You know when a child is most satisfied and secure and safe and happy? When that child feels the delight of mom and dad. When that child knows my parents delight in me. My parents light up when they see me. So sometimes there's some frustration that comes out, but they generally delight in me. I feel safe and secure, and I know I'm loved. I can tell you this from my wife, and don't think of her as any kind of weakness. She's not that, but she'll tell you this. She is most safe and secure and happy when she just knows deep that I delight in her. I find so much joy in her. And when I'm finding joy in her, she feels complete. Like she's doing in a very large part the role God placed for her. When I am satisfied in her, when I'm delighting in her, she is just as safe as can be and loves her life. What Chris Rock misses is that I get to have that too. The dog knows when I've played my role properly, those who are responsible for me delight in me. When a child is doing something that they're playing their role properly, the parents delight in him. When a wife is being an excellent wife and her husband delights in her, there's safety and security. There's light in life. And now listen, when I take care of those who I'm responsible for, when I husband well, hear that word, for sometimes used for fields so that they're growing properly, sometimes used in animal husbandry, that they're progressing properly, having their needs met, watered, and nutrients, having what that field or the animal husbandry, having what she needs. And if I had any kids, and I sort of once did, but those I'm responsible for. When I am doing those things for those for whom I'm responsible, I have a God who delights in me. I actually have a Father in heaven. And he is delighted. I actually kind of can feel it. I'm not an emotional dude. I can feel it. When I'm doing the husband thing well, when I'm doing the father role thing well, when I'm doing the mentor thing well for some young men around the university setting, when I'm doing the pastor thing well, that for the people for whom I'm responsible, there's a delight above me because I'm doing that which I was called to do, created to do. And that's the order. Yes, I would agree with you, Chris Rock, and all the red pill guys. There's not equality. There's not equity between men and women. That is by design. That doesn't mean there's different levels of honor, different levels of respect. It just means there's different roles. And your role is to provide, and when you do it, you will find such joy. What these guys have just forgotten is there's one level even above them. A God of the universe who delights in you when you are taking responsibility and care for the ones he has entrusted to you. All right. That's really all I wanted to say. That's what they're missing. And gentlemen, don't let someone lead you astray with that kind of argument. It's not a good argument. There's not an inequity and an unfairness. Find the joy in the fact that God finds joy in you when you take care of your responsibilities. Next. I'm going to play for you a clip from, I'm going to leave him nameless. Never mind. I was going to name him earlier. I'd put him in the category of the bad kind of Christian nationalist. Maybe the authoritarian type Christian nationalist. Not the Christian nationalist that I would put myself in a category where the idea is, we should want a Christian nation. You know how you do that? You make Christian people. And then after you make the Christian people, you win elections, and you probably elect more Christians, and over time you can actually change a community, a city, a county, a state, maybe a country even. His seems to be the more, I want what I want, I want it right now, and I'm going to take it. We're going to take what we are going to impose what we should, because God's law has to be imposed right now, and I don't know how he thinks he's going to do it, but man, this clip might give you a hint to that. He is talking about the kind of government, I guess. The kind of government we're going to need in the United States where we are right now. Here is the guy that I will just remain nameless.
We're degenerates. We're not even close to... we're degenerates. The Constitution is not... it's not suited for governing degenerates. For governing degenerates, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, if you agree, disagree. But I think... for our population that is degraded morally and culturally, as far and religiously, as far as we have, you need power. Men must be governed. you need a Caesar type, Now, if you're asking me my preference, that would probably be my preference, would be a constitutional republic.
Yeah, I'm going to let him finish, but just to summarize, something he's correct on, John Adams. No, that's not right. James Madison, the guy who wrote the notes on the convention, basically the record keeper for the Constitutional Convention in the summer of 1787 in Philadelphia, said our Constitution was made for a religious people. He actually said a holy religious. That's W-H-O-L-L-Y. a wholly religious people, it is inadequate for the governance of any other. He was saying, we're about to make a people so free that if they're not virtuous, this isn't going to work. And this dude is right. We're not a virtuous people, and it's not working. So we have a lot of chaos. Now, here we have the form of government that most resembles even a setup in the Old Testament with shared powers. Like, yes, Moses was in charge. He was the representative of the people to God and the God to the people. But then Moses would set up smaller groups, you know, by the thousands and the hundreds and the tens, families and clans. That's what we're supposed to be set up like. You know, separation of powers, city governments, county governments, state governments. In our case, because we believe in the depravity of man, and God is not choosing directly our leader like he chose Moses, that we want to spread out power, and you don't want a strong man to take over, because there's danger in that, because people are corrupt and power does corrupt. So not calling constitutional republics, that's what we are, constitutional republic, the biblical form of government, but I'm calling it the one most aligned with the models that we get, the one safest for a people to thrive, dictatorship, and what he just called Caesar-like powers. This is going back to Rome, that what we have, constitutional republic, even for degraded people like we are, is preferable so that you can, again, win people over and start to turn the tide. But let's let this guy finish.
But I think the conditions for that is a moral people. So I think you can work towards that in the future, but I don't think constitutioning even harder is going to get us out of our current mess. I don't see us getting out of this apart from things getting worse and worse, and then eventually like a Caesar type rising through the ranks, a populist, you know, figure, and the people, you know, the political will of the people, the people are desperate and they're like, yes, do it, so-and-so. And
now that might just be a prediction. He might not be making a moral claim on that being good, but he does seem kind of to like the idea that what we actually need is not more constitutioning. We just need a strong man to step up and make everybody behave. That changes no one's heart. That changes no eternal trajectory. It's just, we will have order. And I'm going to argue something that might be offensive to some. I know it would offend this guy, because all these guys who act like we need a dictator, we need an authoritarian, all of them fancy themselves to be very strong and tough men. I find this position to be the most weakling feminine position. It sounds like, Daddy, please save me. It's like, and a lot of these guys, it's Daddy Trump. Daddy, please. And Daddy is just some dude who's more powerful, more influential to them to just come make it right. Instead of, I don't know, you doing your job and actually trying to cultivate a culture that chooses better leaders instead of just someone coming through the ranks and saying, all right, everybody, this is how we're doing it.
And then so-and-so, constitution be damned, just rules with an iron fist and like a Cromwell type. And then you hopefully don't get his son. Maybe then you're able, and then you maybe it's just a one generation, one guy kind of thing. And then you have to move back to, aristocracy or.
And then we move great. You move from, so here we are, constitutional republic. We move to dictatorship. That's fun. And then from dictatorship, you move to rule by the elites. That's the plan. From this very tough guy who just wants some powerful people to come and save him and save his country. I find that to be embarrassing, kind of gross. And I want to just warn against it. I think there's an instinct that does hit where things get bad and you go, just somebody, anybody, just fix it. And there's not great instincts there, especially not where we are. I understand your days are dark. I probably understand it just as well or better than anybody. No, I should say that. I don't understand it better than people. I understand it as well as anyone that the days are dark. And that does not make me wish, Lord, send quickly some strong man to be a dictator and make everyone behave. It instead makes me go, how are we going to effectively evangelize the people that we work with? How are we going to effectively evangelize a pagan country? And Lord, would you do that through your people, not some daddy, will you come please save me? I have two more for you. Maybe three more for you that I want to do, including this Tim Keller sermon from 1993 that I just can't recall. Excuse me, that I just can't believe he was doing. What is that 30 years ago? 93, 03. Yeah, that's, wow. I got old quick. Anyway, before I do that, though, I do always want to say, you know, like right there talking with this gentleman who thinks we should have a dictatorship and then maybe an aristocracy, that what he missed out on was looking towards some different governmental structures that you might find in the Old Testament, in the law. That's something I've been doing a lot over the last year, is trying to ask that question. What does it look like to bring God's laws into modern day? And that gets difficult because sometimes you run across odd laws, like what happens when someone falls off your roof because you failed to put a railing on your roof, and how you're going to make that right. I suspect you've not fallen off of anyone's roof because they failed to put a parapet or a railing around it. That doesn't happen in the modern day, but the modern day equivalent might have happened to you, and the modern day equivalent would be getting hurt at work or hurt in a car accident. Those things are tough. Medical bills pile up, and you are losing wages as you're trying to recover physically and trying to figure out how to get through the labyrinth of a process of just getting justice and make it right. I don't want you to be intimidated by it. Don't be scared by it. There are people who can help you, and the one I think you should choose is a personal friend of mine. His name is Samuel Harms, as in stay out of harm's way. That's Samuel Harms, H-A-R-M-S. You can Google him or reach him at 864-666-6666. That's 864-666-6666. Samuel Harms, attorney at law for real. Don't try to do it alone. Get someone who can help you out. Reach out to him. Samuel Harms is here in Greenville at 33 Market Point Drive, Greenville, South Carolina, 29607. The number is 666-6666. So if you have had the experience of falling off of someone's roof because they failed to put up a parapet, or the modern-day equivalent, actually, of being hurt in an accident or hurt in a car accident, give Samuel Harms a call today at 864-666-6666. Let's stay in that world for just a second, because I did not plan to talk about it, but it just occurred to me. I got a mailer, as I'm getting a lot right now, because the primaries in South Carolina are June the 11th. It's my plan to go vote on May 28th or 29th. Wait, yeah, 28th, because that's when early voting starts. I encourage early voting. I wish more right of center people did and weren't so scared of it. It's a good idea. Go ahead and get it done. Go ahead and get that vote banked. Now, this mailer is a good argument for Christians to work through. I have had the attitude towards theonomists, people who are trying to bring God's law to bear on modern day legislation. When I have criticized their good end, I have criticized their method, saying that they often come across as insane people, and that whatever strategy that they are trying to embark upon, I can't see it. It doesn't seem like there's any strategy at all except just being outlandish and loud. I think this mailer helps us, both sides, people like me that say, hey, you guys are being weird and unhelpful, and people who go, well, you're being weak-kneed and spineless. I think both sides of that discussion have something to take and be challenged by in this mailer. Now, here's the story. I moved a couple years ago now, well, almost 2 years ago, and I have a new house rep. His name is Beach, Thomas Beach, I think. And he either introduced or voted for, in this last cycle, a bill that would make abortion a capital crime, a death penalty crime for women. Not a bill to make in a death penalty crime for doctors, but for the woman, that the woman would be liable for death, that she should be sentenced to death for having an abortion. Either introduced that bill or voted for that bill. Now, the mailer was from his opponent, a Republican opponent, fairly well-funded, and that Republican opponent is appealing to a very conservative district, saying, listen, he might be conservative, but he's also crazy. Isn't that insane that he did that? So vote for me, the real conservative, not a moderate, but just a reasonable conservative. Now, here's an argument I will make, and then I think I will do a steel man job, not a straw man. I will do a steel man job of those who don't think like me. I'll make a good argument on their behalf. We all want abortion to end, right? That's all of our goal. And I do think that law is just, especially over time, as you re-disciple a people, not to think about what's happening in the womb as meaningless and inculcate the value that what's happening in the womb is deeply meaningful. It's made in the image of God. So getting to that point where you call this a capital crime, you can get to a culture where that makes that makes a lot of sense. So let's say that's my goal. I'm in the House of Representatives, and I want to get there. And right now I live in a country that 5%, 3% of people would agree with you. Like, it's a tiny group. In this very conservative district, it's not a majority position. That's why the opponent mailed it out. If the opponent mailed it out, that tells us the opponent has some data that says, even in one of the most conservative districts in a very conservative state, that sounds insane to people. And I can use that to my advantage. And so I know if I'm a House rep, when I'm in the House with 124 members in the South Carolina House of Representatives, I know my bill has no chance of passing to institute the death penalty for women who have abortions. And while I know it has zero chance of passing, I know that presenting it or voting for it will make me liable. The person who thinks the right thing, the person that you want in the House, it makes me liable to lose my next election. And then when, what prospects do I have then? What prospects do I have to actually cast that vote at a time when I do have the votes? Right now in the House of Representatives, there might be 10 votes for that bill. Well, I just got myself a loss, and now there's 9 votes in the House because I insisted on bringing this up right now when it can't pass, and I insisted on voting for it right now when it can't pass. I got to do it. I would argue that was counterproductive. I think he's going to win this, but it's going to be close. I don't generally like him and his demeanor anyway. I'm not a huge fan of his opponent either because the opponent has some – he's not nearly as conservative as I am. But if you are trying to get to that end, you have to be strategic and thoughtful. Now, on the other side, here's the steel man argument. William Wilberforce went before Parliament – actually, I think it's 235 years ago yesterday, and presented for the first time his bill to abolish slavery in the British Empire. That was a 30-year project. It took a long time. And that dude brought it up over and over. I think he brought it up every year. It kept bringing it up. And he kept getting more votes and more votes, and it took forever, and they finally abolished the slave trade. So you who say we want this just and good law, you have a good example. Maybe one of the arguably the greatest legislative triumph by a Christian for a Christian cause in the West's history. I can't think of a better one. And maybe that's different strategies. William Wilberforce was in a parliamentary seat where both he was popular and that idea was popular. It wasn't popular in the rest of the state, or excuse me, the rest of the country, but it was popular where he was. And so he could continue to bring it up, and he knew he wasn't going anywhere. That's thinking about strategy. These projects often take a long time. And so we got to be people who are patient, thoughtful, strategic. Let's example for this beach guy who represents me. Let's say he fends off this challenge and he really builds a strong voter base in this little district. Usually in these primaries, you need to win like 2,500 votes to win the primary. And he just knows he's got the votes. He's got 2,500 solid votes. Then sure, why not? Bring it up over and over and over again. But if he does lose, it's a good example about being wise. All right, let me move to this Keller clip. This is 1993 that he is bringing up this topic in New York City in a sermon. It goes towards maybe the God of the age, because it was the God of the age in New York City before it hit everybody else. This is typical of big cities. They are first to cultural movements, and so the God of this age is feelings. I am my feelings. This was the text for it was Psalm 8, and he stopped. Oh, sorry, Psalm 8 is a reflection on Genesis 1, and so the psalmist writes, "What is man that you are mindful of him?" But he stops on the question, "Well, what is man?" Because right now the secular culture is saying you are various things, and he went through some of the various answers. You are your possessions. You are your sexual experiences. You are your desirability. You are your money. And one of the sections of the sermon was, you are your feelings. You are your emotions and the things that you feel about yourself. Man, if that is the God of this age, is you are your feelings. And so let me play for you some really good stuff from Tim Keller in 1993.
example, I watched a talk show for about 5 minutes earlier this week in which there was a 17-year-old boy who was on the show with his mother, and he wanted a sex change operation. And the only problem that the mother had with it was, and the only problem the audience had with it was, is this what he really wants? He's, after all, he's awfully young. What does he really want? And so you see, the assumption is that if we can just get down deep enough to find out what we truly want, if we can find that coherent set of desires, then we can know what we are. Let me ask you a question. What evidence have you got that your feelings at the deepest level are any less contradictory than your feelings at the conscious level? What evidence have you got for the fact that for the idea that down deep there is a true set of feelings that are unified and coherent? Look at your feelings, you know? I want a career. I want a family. I want to eat ice cream. I want to be a size 8. Those are all contradictory feelings. We want them. We love them. Now, you say, but there's a deeper, down deep, what I really want is, what do you mean? Now, I talk to men and I talk to women who say, I really want a career, but I really want a family. Okay, what's your truest feeling?
He does a good job here of then just saying, your feelings are going to be contradictory. It's the one thing you just cannot trust. Because he even gives the illustration about feelings he had when he was 20 versus when he was 40, and that feelings just change. And he does a good job of skewering the idea that you can trust your feelings to find anything approaching the truth. We need that just as much today. This is responding to the idol of the day. You just can't find truth in your feelings, and he does it. We should do it. Point to Scripture. One last piece of audio from this sermon that I thought was again, it's prescient, I think the word is. It's before its time. He starts to lambast in the Keller way, the way that Keller and me, for that matter, lambast things, is we don't yell about them. We just kind of explain calmly why they're wrong. I might say things like, this is dumb. That's a stupid way to think. But I'll say it in that tone. Lambast the idea that he started to read that identity is not something you discover. Like, it's concrete. It's a thing that is just true about you. You don't discover it. You create it. You make your own identity. It's not given to you by your parents or your family, your country of origin, or anything else that might define you. You've got to. Not you. One of the options that in his age there in New York City at that time, you must create your identity or you're failing yourself. Here's more from that sermon.
You are whatever the heck you say you are. Now, this came from Jean-Paul Sartre, but now it's picking up a lot of steam. And it is a movement away. It would say that the first view is oppressive and bourgeois. It would say the second view, though, is naive and fantastic. And if you want to, there's a big, just to give you a quick example of the fact that this view, it's consistent and it's terrifying. But this view is coming on, I noticed, for example, in reading the Village Voice last year during the Gay Pride Week, it pointed out that the old gay pride movement was based on the second view of the self that said that if you're gay, it's because you found something in yourself. You found out who you really are and you have to submit to it. You have to. This is just who you are. This is the way you are. So you have to do it. And the whole gay gay liberation, you might call, movement was based on that. But now there's a growing number of people inside the gay movement called the bi-queer movement. The bi-queer movement is full of people who were told for years that if you're gay, that's all you can be. And they found that they're capable of heterosexual activity. And so they say, I was homosexual, now I'm finding I'm bisexual. But they question the whole idea that you have to submit to a certain kind of self and sexuality. This group says, it's oppressive to say, I've got to be something. It's oppressive to say that any particular self I have to discover, all self is constructed, all self is chosen. I am whoever I say I am.
And that is now the dominant way of thinking for secular progressivism in this age. Okay, in 1993, I don't think a lot of people were talking about that. In 1993, the churches that were full of people were doing judgment houses, talking about the rapture a lot, spending the mega churches were coming along, so they were probably talking about defeating the giants of in your life of bad marriages and defeating the giant of unforgiveness and defeating the giant of debt. Like, if we could have had some theological training in 93 that was a little more widespread about what was coming, I think that would have been super helpful. But that's also helpful for us now. I mean, he was trying to warn us then, and we're living in it. We're living in the wreckage of it. And that hopefully that equips you some. All right, last thing. There is in the Wall Street Journal today. Yeah, it is May 13th as I'm talking to you. In the Wall Street Journal today, the title of the article was Global Birth Rates in Decline and Now the Whole World Panics, or Now the Whole Earth Panics. It's something like that. I'm looking over at my bookshelf, as I often do during the show, and looking at a book called America Alone that I bought in like 2002. And I've been talking about that book since I got on the air in 2008. It's one of the most important books I ever read. It was by Mark Stein, and Mark Stein was warning in 2002 that, hey everyone, it's kind of important that you have kids, because only the Muslim countries are having a lot of kids, and if we don't have kids, then the whole world's going to be Muslim. So have some kids, guys. That was Mark Stein warning us in 2002. And I've been making that warning for many years. Like, our birth rate, fertility rate's way too low. We got to have more kids in the Western world and the Christian world, because he is right. The Muslim world is growing not by conversion. It is just growing by having so many kids. Like, I remember reading that book back then. The birth rates in the West, like Spain, England, Italy, Germany, it was 1.6, 1.7, 1.8 kids per woman. And then he put up the chart of places like Bali, and the other big one was, it was Muslim countries in Africa, the Middle East, and you know, it was, the top one was 8 kids per woman, 7.5 kids per woman, 6 kids per woman, and you're like, oh, whoa, wow, this is gonna get really testy really quickly with these birth rates. And now, finally, the Wall Street Journal is writing a big story, and more governments around the world, now that it's much too late, are saying, oh, this is a big deal. We're going to have to start having some kids. And I just want to, there's lots I could say about this. I want to say really only a few things. Basically, here's my premise. Ideas have consequences. So not everyone is noticing we got a problem. Not enough kids. But not enough kids is a consequence of the ideas that the secular progressive, the secularists gave us. Like the idea that the purpose of life is for you to enjoy yourself. You have got to be the truest you and have the most pleasure and experiences you can. And you know what makes that hard? A spouse and some kids. A spouse and some kids sounds like a real drag on you going to Indonesia. Spouse and some kids sounds like it might make it really hard for you to go on that Italian vacation. You don't want, you got to think twice about maybe those spouse and those kids. It's going to be easier in your life. Man, you can't live in a, 800 square feet in a small apartment in the big city if you got a spouse and kids. You got to start investing in space and land and move out of the cool big cities. We have the idea that the purpose of life is for you to indulge yourself, and we acted like in the 70s and 80s when we were saying that we weren't just going to lead ourselves to not having any kids. We said the purpose of life is for you to enjoy yourself, and so, of course, delay marriage, because being alone has it, especially when we separate marriage from sex, and you can have all the sex you want outside of marriage, then, yeah, why would I do marriage? This is so much better not being married. We said delay children. Wait as long as you can, because they're hard, and you have to actually sacrifice yourself. I look at the parents in our church. I'm blown away by them. They do sacrifice a lot. They don't get to just do whatever they want to do. Me being childless, I'm obligated to a lot of people, but not like parents are. It's a sacrifice, but we told people it's not worth it, so we delayed children. Of course, we made abortion very easy, so we aborted 60 million since 73. There's idea, for that matter, the second idea, the fact that sex is not just separated from marriage, but sex is separated from procreation. It is purely recreational. Those are the ideas we put out into the zeitgeist. And we got to stop pretending to be surprised by the consequences of those ideas. And now we do have major problems. And it's why these birth rates that are so low, you can be encouraged that they are decently high in Christian families. in Orthodox families, and when I say Orthodox, I don't mean Jewish Orthodox, Christian Orthodox. I don't even mean Eastern Orthodox. I mean people who believe the Bible. And so you can be encouraged by that. There's some good things there. All right, last thing for me. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads. I never told you today. Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Twitter. Find me on any of those. Usually just searching for my name works because my name is quite unique. I'd love your feedback. You can do that on the Spotify app. You can do that on any of the social media outlets. You can also find me at CoreyTruackShow@gmail.com. CoreyTruackShow@gmail.com for any kind of feedback. And if the Lord allows, I'll be back with another new edition of the Corey Truax Show next week. Until then, everybody, peace and love.